Welcome, one and all, to another edition of the Marketing Overdrive podcast. I'm your host, Greg Kalikas, and being joined by the media maven herself, Miss Rose Browning.
Oh, thank you.
And Rose, tonight's show is going to be a little unique.
I think so.
We actually have our in-studio guest, Miss Erin Johnson, who's going to be sitting in with us for the entire podcast. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So to give you an official introduction, Erin is a realtor with eXp Realty and the founder of Outstanding Ohio. And I won't do it justice, so I will let you talk about Outstanding Ohio and what exactly that community is, if you don't
Perfect.
Mind.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, now?
Yes,
okay.
Might as well.
So it's a Facebook group I started. My slogan for it is highlighting the people, places, and things that make Ohio great and providing tips from local experts to help you live your best life. So I provide content at least 5 days a week with highlighting, you know, businesses, people, just providing different tips. And it's grown to over 1,400 members. And it's really been a lot of engagement in the group, and people are making great connections and so forth. So we can talk more about it during the interview.
But yes, better believe it.
Love that.
And I can attest to it. I'm, you know, kind of on the fringe of the group. I'm not formally on the Facebook group yet, but I've been a part of it. And yes, there's so many good things to talk about when it comes to that group. But as we usually do tonight, Rose, we're going to give our top five list of marketing mistakes at the end of the show. So, and we're going to kind of attack this from two different perspectives. So make sure you guys stick around. It's going to be a very interesting conversation. But as we usually do, we're going to start with some marketing news. So Rose, what do you got?
All right, me first. Let's see. I have an article here, how a stay-at-home year accelerated three trends in the advertising industry. It's March 13th, 2021, CNBC. So the idea, the key points here are that there were three things that really got catapulted during, you know, the COVID, stay-at-home year, how, whatever you want to call it. The idea here is everybody becomes more data-driven and more agile during a recovery, which is what we're hoping, right, as marketing people. One of those things is connected TV, which I know I've talked about this several times, the programmatic space. The CEO of Trade Desk says the Trade Desk's first quarter 2020 call in May that he had been expecting a revolution in the area of streaming TV, which I think that we're seeing in huge amounts. We've talked about this before. You know how I feel about it in terms of targeting, in terms of analytics. But again, 2020 has just been a huge year for programmatic and connected TV. The second one is e-commerce, right? I think we all know, I know I have specifically one of my top Amazon, right? I know you shake your head at
You're
me.
You're a shopping degenerate.
because I'm on Amazon all the time. But yeah, so the e-commerce brands and platforms have been working for years on getting consumers comfortable with the idea of buying something they haven't actually seen, touch, or tried on. In the past year, many consumers haven't had a choice and have turned online to order groceries, essentials, and other items. I don't know about you. We started buying our groceries online, or, you know, any other needs that we had for the house, household items from Amazon, and all those other things. So we could kind of stay out of the store, right? And third is flexibility. This past year has been a bit of a right place, right time situation for many brands. One specifically in this article, it talks about We Are Rosie and just how they had to be able to pivot in terms of creative, in terms of messaging, in terms of where they were putting their message. It's a great article. Go check it out. I know that was a short one for me. But I think that it speaks volumes to kind of what's been happening over the past year.
Oh, it's very relevant. And, you know, in terms of, I guess if you could call it positive, you know, one thing that's come from COVID has been, you know, everybody's gone online shopping now, whether you wanted to or not. It kind of forced your hand and people have become accustomed to it. And now I think it's one of those things that is going to be a part of our lives.
Yeah.
Regardless if the masks come off or not.
For sure. And I think a lot of brands, they turn to creating that e-commerce solution that maybe they didn't have before.
Right.
So
that's a good point. Yeah, good article for sure. And one of the other elements we talked about, I think on a previous podcast too, was you know, you really had no choice. Everybody was going digital during COVID. So, you know, the smart business owners, as we've talked about, didn't panic, you know, pull the trigger on their campaign, hit the pause button. And more often than not, they benefited from it enormously in 2020. So good stuff. So I'm going to give a little insight to our top five marketing mistakes at the end of the show, because actually weren't related. It just happened to work out this way. But I saw this on CNN Business, actually, and this was posted March 31st of this year, 2021. And I got a laugh, but again, it's kind of fitting for this show, and I had to bring it. So essentially, Volkswagen, the company based in Germany, everybody knows and loves, really screwed up. So the situation has Volkswagen literally at the risk of running afoul of U.S. securities laws by wading into the murky waters of misleading investors. So in case you missed it, Volkswagen entered the spotlight after it announced back in early April, April 1st, to America that it was changing its name to Volkswagen, V-O-L-T-S Wagon, and would use the new name and ads for its electric vehicles. Volkswagen later backtracked and said it's definitely not changing its name, and the whole thing was an April Fool's-inspired marketing ploy. So in yet another statement they released, Volkswagen of America, quote, has developed and implemented a marketing campaign to draw attention, also with a wink, to Volkswagen's e-offensive, end of quote, in the launch of its new all-electric SUVs. But here's the thing. People took the first untrue statement about the name change seriously, to the point where Wall Street analysts even released guidance about what such a change might mean for the car maker's strategic direction. So as you can imagine, the confusion that created over the name change promptly caused the Securities and Exchange Commission to investigate the matter. And at the end of the day, Volkswagen stock has fallen nearly 4%.
Oh my gosh. I'd be curious to know what the last time they had a drop.
That's a great question.
To see what happened.
And there's actually a precedent for this, believe it or not. The SEC, as far as taking action against what they're calling cheeky statements regarding big brands, in 2018, your boy Elon Musk settled with the SEC for $20 million after his tweet about securing funding to take the company private at $420 a share, an apparent joke about weed, 420. I didn't know Elon was a smoker, but it misled investors, and he got in some deep shit. So
who is fact-checking this? Everybody fact-checks everything, but you don't fact-check some money, bro, fools.
Well, and apparently somebody at Volkswagen okayed this stunt. So
I mean, it was probably a team of people who had to approve this.
A team of people looking for jobs.
Oh, my goodness. That.
So that's it. That's our marketing news. And with that, Aaron, thank you. You've been patiently waiting. Thank you again so much. I know you've got kids and a million different careers, so you know it means a lot that you took time out to join us here tonight.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So looking at your bios, obviously you have a marketing background, going back to your time at American Greetings. So why don't we start there? How did you kind of catch the, let's call it the marketing bug?
Yeah, I've always had this entrepreneurial side of me from time I was a kid. I think it's, you know, I was thinking back to when we went door to door selling the world's finest chocolate bars. Yes. Me and my brother would get them in the wagon and we'd be out there all day and seeing what we could do with those or lemonade stands or whatnot. But I started probably my first official business at age 12 with a friend. We started a little, I guess you'd call it a pop-up shop today. We somehow, my friend's mom gave us her credit card and we ordered from Oriental Trading. Yes. We quickly learned what a gross was. And we put a markup on it and we did flyers around the neighborhood. And I think we netted like $100. Like we did really well for this weekend little shop that we did out of her backyard. And from there on out, it's just, my mind's always been thinking about, okay, what can I do or how could I make money or, you know.
A true entrepreneur.
Yes. I always kind of had that bug, so yeah.
I love it.
Well, on that note, you started a company called Live, Love, and Create. And from what I see, it's a fairly unique concept. Can you explain specifically what you specialize in and maybe what was the inspiration behind starting that?
Yeah, so I like to call it a social crafting company because I really was passionate about finding opportunities for people to connect with each other in a meaningful way, as well as kind of have that creative outlet and make a craft. And I also like to focus on crafts that people could be proud of making, that they, when they went home, they had a lot of fun. You do this paint and sip thing and you go home and you're like, oh crap, that thing sucks. You know,
like, been so, there.
Right. Guilty. So I really try to make my projects what I would call accessible. You know, people come in, I don't have it, I'm not creative. And it's like, no, you know, these are pretty, you know, foolproof. You can make them. They're going to look great. You're going to be proud to display them, but also projects that are practical and useful where possible. So I'll do things like a toilet paper holder that you can put on the back of your toilet or a napkin holder or a sign that you can hang all your kids' school photos on or things like that.
That's fun.
So I did these workshops at wineries, breweries, companies. We did some corporate creativity things, restaurants. And then I had a kids' craft club I would do after school once a month in half a dozen schools. And then COVID hit. I couldn't go any of those places anymore. So, you know, talk about flexibility and pivoting. I had to quickly pivot and I offered DIY kits. I had to figure out, you know, how to package the paint and I had to write instructions and figure out how to offer shipping. And, you know, it was almost like starting a whole nother business.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
So did that, offered virtual parties and just pivoted that. So you can check it out at liveloveandcreate.com. There's a lot of projects out there.
Which leads me to my next question. So you're a business owner, you're a successful real estate agent, which we'll get into shortly. How do you have time to run a group like Outstanding Ohio? Let's start there because that's, you know, one of the main reasons I wanted to have you here. I've been so impressed with, you know, the structure, the people, just everything about Outstanding Ohio. That's really what I wanted to talk to you about. So yeah. How do you have time and where did the inspiration for that come from?
So I guess to answer that question, it's, so how I jumped from crafting to the realty is, I mean, with the pandemic, it's like I thought, okay, how? I mean, when is this ever going to open back up? And when are people going to feel comfortable crafting in person and sharing supplies again? And it didn't look promising, let's face it, right? So I figured pretty quickly I'm going to have to do something else. So that's when I got my real estate license and decided I'm really going to focus full time on real estate. I still have the crafting website up. I still have offer the kits and I'll do occasional parties. But really now my primary focus is the realty. And so as I figured out how am I going to like launch myself into this new venture, I wanted to think about a way that I could add value. You read a lot about coming from a place of value, adding value, and how can I add value to people in my sphere? And I'm not a real salesy person, so I'm like, I don't want to be out there being like, hey guys, I sell real estate, and you know, calling you up, and hey, do you want to sell your house? So I really wanted to provide some content that would people would find valuable. And so that kind of is how the Outstanding Ohio community was born. And where I thought I could add value. So through my years in the crafting business, I started going to networking events. And prior to that, I worked 18 years at American Greeting. So I sat in an office all day and I really didn't get out much. And I started going to these networking events and I met the most amazing people and like learned about things that I had no idea existed. And I feel like a lot of people probably don't. And I've lived in Northeast Ohio my whole life. And there's still things I'm discovering that I had no idea, you know, were out there. So I thought, is there a way I can kind of bring those two things together and kind of share the wealth of information about what's, you know, these great people, places, and things in Northeast Ohio with other people and use that as a way to also grow my sphere. So kind of add value and stay top of mind within my sphere, but then use it to grow the sphere. And so I decided to start this Facebook group. I had a plan for my content. I do an engagement post every morning that's everything from what's your favorite spring activity in Ohio to do you prefer chunky or creamy peanut butter to, you know, what's your preferred superpower and, you know, just different things like that. Gets people talking, gets people engaged. And then I provide content at least 5 days a week under a theme. So Mondays is Making It Monday. We'll have videos with recipes, with craft projects, different things you can make. Wellness Wednesdays, everything from financial wellness, physical wellness, mental wellness, just different tips, whether it's from a chiropractor or fitness tips, an ab workout, you name it. We do Spotlight Sunday where we're highlighting local businesses and nonprofits and so forth. So people have really enjoyed the content. But my vision also was that this really was going to be a community, that it wasn't, you know, and I prior to having the crafting business, I also wasn't in any of these community Facebook groups, but I started joining some of those and quickly learned they're very negative. There's people complaining about the traffic.
Yep.
The schools, who heard the loud bang on the corner? Should I take my child to the ER? Like, why are you in the Facebook group asking about, you know, taking your child to the ER? And on and on, right? And sprinkled with people, like, plugging their businesses, right? Yeah. And I wanted it to be more of a community where there people are finding value and connecting with each other. And I knew to do that, I'd have to take the group, the connections outside of Facebook as well. And that's where I wanted to do some events. And I think that's where we met is through one of those events. So I asked the group at one point, I did a poll, what kind of events would, and there was a lot of interest in a lot of different types of events, but the top one was business networking. We have a lot of small business owners in the group. It wasn't like the intention of the group that this is a group of small business owners, but because we're promoting a lot of them in there, that's kind of happened naturally. And so I started holding monthly virtual networking meetings, and starting last month, we're also doing an in-person one, in-person. And then out of that, I'd ask people, you know, what do you need help with? What are your challenges? And they'd say, oh, I need help with social media. I need help with time management. So we started calling on some of the experts in the group to say, hey, would you be willing to do a lunch and learn and come to the group and teach some social media tips? We had a panelist of social media experts. Tomorrow we're doing a time management one. So that's provided a lot of value to the business community. But then we've also done some social happy hours. We had a magician come on for a happy hour and do some tricks. And we did a hike meetup. And I have visions of, you know, game nights and all this stuff. Like when we can actually meet in person, we'll see where it goes. But having that sense of community where you can really truly make that connection, because it's hard. Let's face it, as adults, it's hard to make friends. It's hard to make quality business connections. Yes. And so I thought that I could help provide that value and that sense of community through the group. So it's been amazing. And I just love, you know, like I said, we're at 14 members after over 1400 members after 6 months. People are super engaged and loving it. And I just love hearing the stories of people like, oh, that's my new favorite place to shop now. Or I made that recipe yesterday. Or I met this new connection. Like, people really are connecting and getting value out of it, which is awesome.
And it's no joke. I mean, you were kind enough to invite me to one of the calls. And this was a few months ago. And it is like military precision, the way this woman runs these calls. And it's amazing.
You have to.
You go and you order. And like she said, it's not really salesy. It's, you know, what challenges are you having, or what would you need help with, or connections you want to make? And I remember I spoke up once. I don't even remember what it was that I needed. Literally the next day, I had not only an email from Aaron saying, here, you know, you were asking about this, here you go. Somebody else from the group reached out, and, you know, it's just, it's different. And, you know, mission accomplished. Well, and it's music to my ears, by the way, to hear that we're going back to in person. That's going to be.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait. Oh, I can't wait.
You can't network on, you know, Zoom calls. You can, but it's just not the same.
It's getting old too. Yeah. People are craving that in person.
So, for those that are listening and obviously curious now, and they want to be a member of the group, how can one do that?
Yeah, they can just search Outstanding Ohio on Facebook and join that way. There's a few questions to join the group that I'll and then I'll submit approve you. I would recommend putting your email address. That's how you can get notified of all the events. I post about the events in the group, but, you know, the way Facebook tees things up, you may not see it.
Don't get her started.
She knows
this.
She knows the space.
If you're not on Facebook, I'm putting the same content out on a YouTube channel, occasionally on LinkedIn, and a blog on my website and some other places. But the sense of community is really happening. The magic's happening within Facebook. But if you're not on Facebook, you can get a lot of that content elsewhere.
Things have gotten crazy in the real estate market. Just crazy in terms of finding and buying homes pretty much everywhere. From your point of view, when did things start to go so nuts, and where does that end?
I think it started right when I got into real estate. I think I caused it.
That's how it usually works.
No, I think looking back, I think it really was like late, like fourth quarter of last year, September to December, as that pent-up demand from being in lockdown kind of came to a head. And I looked at some data. Summit County single-family home sales from September through December, the houses sold increased over prior year by 21%. Mm. Wow. The houses listed decreased by 34%.
Yeah.
So there's this huge squeeze, right? And more people are looking to buy because, hey, I don't have to, you know, maybe live as close to work anymore, or I need more space to work from home or for my kids to school from home. The interest rates are low. Millennials are starting to settle down. So it's a combination of things. And on the flip side, sellers are a little hesitant because the pandemic, they didn't want people coming in. Maybe if they're older, they didn't worry about that. They're hesitant to maybe they're going to lose their job or uncertain about their employment. And then they're knowing that there's an inventory shortage. It's like, yeah, I'd love to sell and make this great money, but I don't know where to go. And I'm worried I'm not going to find something. So it's this weird kind of catch 22 that the first 3 months of this year, the houses sold has been flat, but the listings are down 39%. So we still have this huge, way more buyers than sellers. And I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you anticipate that bubble to burst anytime soon?
I, you know, unfortunately I don't have my magic eight ball on this, but experts are saying no, that there's not likely to be like a crash like there was.
Really?
And they're saying,
do you buy that?
You know, they're expecting home prices to increase by 8% this year and another 5 to 6% the next.